welcome to the Sutliffian Report, the place where the news is never hidden and the truth always wins. Is this the Christian news show? I'm going to start with reading a little devotional from Joshua 1, 1 to 9. Now, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now, therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, unto the land I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and unto the great sea toward the going down of the sun shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not fail you nor forsake you. This book starts with Joshua. This book starts with Joshua having spoken with God after the death of Moses. Joshua receives a commission to lead from God himself. Joshua had been the personal servant of Moses, understood being a servant. He had a servant's heart. He was one of two Hebrew slaves, still alive after 40 years in the wilderness. It was time to stop mourning the dead and start walking in victory. This land, so beautiful, so undiscovered to them, was being given to them by God alone. Joshua had also been a warrior. He was tough. He understood more than anyone what it meant to lead the Hebrew people, since he watched them anger and frustrate Moses for decades. Moses had let his frustrations get the better of him. It was why he was not entering the promised land, but God chose Joshua. Being chosen was one thing. God promises him, I will be with you. I will not fail you nor forsake you. Having seen the miracles of God, Joshua must have felt so emboldened. Are you ready to walk in victory? Are you ready to stand tall with God? Are you ready to be that which God desires of you today? Today is that day. Dear Lord God, Moses and Joshua saw many miracles. They had to strike fear within them, for the great and unbelievable displays of your power were made visible. But why fear when you are with me? You're with us, Lord. Lord, grant us the ability to walk out bold, unafraid, to share you with others as we walk as an example of your great love. In Jesus' name, amen. Now, I have, I'm about to share with you one incredible interview. Why? Because Robert Spencer shared an article on Tuesday about Amazon taking down Rebecca Bynum's book, Allah is Dead. It was probably one of the most foolish things they've done, but again, they proved how hypocritical they are. But then they can do what they want because no one can tell them no, right? Now I'm going to play this interview, and again, I have to say, first of all, that I was honored to even get the chance, and she is just an incredible person. Here we go. So, today I have with me Rebecca Bynum. Rebecca Bynum has an excellent book out there. It's been out a while, and Amazon decided to discontinue her book on Amazon. Robert Spencer put it this way on PJ Media this week: the freedom of speech is on the ropes, and it just received another body blow. Over at Amazon, you can still get Friedrich Nietzsche's God is Dead, God Remains Dead, and We Have Killed Him. You can still get Richard Dawkins' The God Delusion. You can get Christianity Disproved, the conclusive proof that Christianity is false. You can get God Needs to Go, Why Christians' Beliefs Fail. You can get All the Wrong with the Bible, Contradictions, Absurdities, and More. You can get Four Disturbing Questions with One Simple Answer, Breaking the Spell of Christian Belief, and on and on and on. But you can't get Allah is Dead, Why Islam is Not a Religion, by the New English Reviews editor, Rebecca Bynum.
No, they pulled it completely. I thought it was just going to be the Kindle version, but they pulled the entire book. Fortunately, though, it's still available other in other outlets, but Amazon just took it down with no explanation, really, just that it violated their terms of something or other. But they've been selling it for 10 years. It's a 10-year-old book. So it is, I don't really quite understand it. And it seems to be just to be on the title alone, because I've used that argument in other things, and it's in my other book, but it was a title, I believe, that they objected to. Allah is Dead.
Well, I think the biggest fear they have, besides Allah being dead, and well, the question is, was he ever alive on top of that? But I think they fear something that you and I agree to, and I know Robert Spencer doesn't, but you and I tend to believe that Islam is not a religion, but a political animal or entity. Would you care to talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. I characterize it as the duck-billed platypus of belief systems, because Islam doesn't just contain a belief system. It also contains a judicial system, a political system, a social system, a complete system of life, they call it. Issues of war and peace, everything is decided in Islam. And so when you start talking about what should be considered a religion under the First Amendment, you have to look at all these other aspects of Islam that couldn't possibly be thought of as a religion when the First Amendment was written.
It's so true. I mean, the truth is that there really wasn't any Muslims here to speak of until the 1870s, and then very far and few between. You can go do some research. People can go do research if you want to question that. I've done my research. It's kind of shocking when you get start looking at the numbers. I'm amazed this that they would carry Friedrich Nietzsche's God is Dead at the same time claiming that your book violates something.
Yeah, violates their terms and conditions. Right, and that's one part of the argument as to why Islam is not a religion. Another part of my argument is that if you imagine that here is a two lines, and one is spirit and one is matter, and they cross. Okay, in all religions, most all religions except for Islam, the test for morality is, do we elevate the spiritual value over material considerations? And that all religions contain this, that goodness is more important than material reality, that truth is more important, that beauty is more important, morality is contained in this idea that we elevate the spiritual, and the spiritual and the material are two distinct realms. Now, where they cross is where nihilism is. Now, that is Nietzsche. That is where spirit and matter are just one thing. There is really no spirit. It's the material world is all there is. The universe is indifferent to us. We're evolved hydrogen, as Elon Musk said the other day. We're really nothing more than flesh and blood robots, in other words. There's no mind, there's no nothing, it's just material world is all there is. Now, beyond that, where matter and spirit are inverted, is where Islam lies. In Islam, the material adherence to the doctrine, to the rules of Islam, are more important than considerations of truth or goodness. And this is a complete inversion of their morality, which makes Islam entirely unique among religious belief systems. If analyze it as far as goodness and truth, you would say that Islam is an untrue, false, evil religion. So do you want that to be covered by the First Amendment? I say no. Thirdly, you have to take into consideration how Islam acts in the world. Mostly with religion, the way the secular society deals with religion is we give it a pride of place. We give it great consideration because it does so much for society. Religion gives meaning to life. It creates social harmony, brotherhood, feelings of charity and goodwill among men. This does not exist in Islam. In Islam, there's a distinction between Muslims and non-Muslims, and Muslims are superior to non-Muslims, and Muslims then must have pride of place in everything. So this is a completely different religious understanding than what the framers had in mind when they put together the First Amendment. And that's my argument.
Even in their own religion, even as members of their own faith, one of the problems that is faced is that I've written about in my last book is the concept of hatred, that they must hate even members of their own faith should they not be a good enough Muslim, and they would call for the death of anybody who leaves. Now, I think what you're saying is extremely important because you're talking about the law that we were talking about the law earlier. It's not only laws for Muslims; it's laws for non-Muslims. It's not only
right.
superiority, as you're saying. It is a superiority only for the people who consider themselves the best Muslims, and that group only, basically. They can.
Yes.
Historically, one of the things that I've discovered doing research was that even going through India, there have been many great writers who were there during England's rule over this, over them, and they've actually discussed how jihad was declared. Well, when one Muslim group would call the other Muslim group non-Muslim, and mm-hmm. they would have a hijra. And the hijra would go to that one side that had called the other ones non-Muslim, and then they would have a jihad.
Right.
And this is...
That's how Islam has spread, traditionally,
yeah.
One jihad at a time. Mm-hmm.
And this hijra. Is... I can't... Do you have any thoughts as to why you think Amazon would decide to not carry a book they've been carrying for 10 years?
Oh, I think they're all trying to outdo each other as far as being politically correct and canceling those who don't toe the line. And so, that, this is the reality that we live with now. And so we just, I guess, have to find ways around it. There'll eventually be conservative-only publishers, conservative-only Twitter, conservative-only everything, and liberal-only everything. And at that point, I don't know if we're going to have a country. We have to talk to each other. We have to discuss these things and be reasonable. This you can't say that. That's not the American culture I know. This used to be a free country.
I'm amazed. Yes, you're right. It's the lack of discussion, the lack of, I guess what bothers me the most is the lack of desire to seek truth, because that, I think, is what's the other part of this. It's one thing to hide truth. It's another thing to have no desire to find it. And that's a little scary.
Yes. And philosophically, this has been a problem coming on for quite a while, because it's almost as though there is no, the left or a great portion of them have decided that there really isn't a truth. There is no real objective out there truth. It's all an inner subjective, my truth, your truth, our truth. And so then it just becomes competing narratives. And you just do what you have to get your narrative across the finish line. Whether it's untrue or not doesn't matter. It's your narrative. The ends are justify the means, and truth goes by the wayside is right off the bat. Yeah.
Some things are amazing. When they're going to promote God is dead, Nietzsche, and they're going to promote that narrative. It's one.
Well, with God goes truth, goes goodness. I mean, morality. When you throw God out, you've thrown out the basis of our civilization, the absolute basis. And it's not a matter of whether the country will stand. The country certainly won't, but the civilization won't stand either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're in a battle. We're in the battle for the sake of the country, but I don't think, I think your points are exact on point, but I don't think many people understand that this country can't survive without its Christian base. Can't survive without that. I think you had said to me before that life is in life is in the, our rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. These things are, if you do without these things, I mean, Christianity is indelibly throughout the Declaration of Independence. If you read the Constitution, it's throughout there. There's no denying this.
I think some of the framers, I'm not sure who, said that it really wouldn't work in a non-Christian country, because you have to, for there to be liberty, there has to be a morality, that people are self-constrained, so that everything isn't laws.
Yes.
That you have a level of self self-restraint that allows civil society to function. Otherwise, if everybody's crazy and running around and upset all the time, and if I say something you don't like and you want to kill me over it, civilized society is gone.
Oh, well,
speaking of,
Rebecca, thank you for spending the time with me. I'm going to do everything I can to promote this book. In the meantime, I've recommended Sophie's. That's where I'm trying to get my book out. That's now being sold for $700 on Amazon. Trying to stop me or anything by putting this inflated price out, but I want to, again, thank you. Please don't stop what you're doing. Please keep promoting New English Review. I know I am. Your work is incredibly important. Please continue.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate it, Paul, and God bless you.
God bless. Thank you. Now, I was spoiled. When I get a chance to talk with a woman that intelligent, who just oozes intellectuality, enjoy the time. She was impressive. I wish I could have had more time. Unfortunately, when this happened, I had unexpected repairs to be done in my apartment. So the joy of unexpected visitors, and that cut that visit short. I do want to comment on a little piece more on what she said, because she is so right about this country can't survive without its Christianity. There is a great man, Alexander de Tocqueville, I believe is the last, de Tocqueville is the last name. And accordingly, this is from Heritage. You can go to heritage.org and you can look up Tocqueville on Christianity and American Democracy. This is by Carson Holloway, and I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's 42 minutes, but there's a small piece I want to mention here from Tocqueville. According to Tocqueville concludes the preservation of America's traditional religion is one of the most important tasks of democratic statesmanship. Indeed, he goes so far as to say that religion should be considered the first of America's political institutions, and even that it is necessary for Americans to maintain Christianity at all costs. Now, Tocqueville was a Frenchman who came to see and understand the great experiment that was taking place in the United States. This form of government was unique. It had not been done before. So people came here to cuss out. And de Tocqueville did an incredible job writing about this. I do recommend picking up his book, Democracy in America, and reading through it. You want to definitely read this book, Democracy in America, because it is truly impossible to get a great understanding of this country without having, you can read the Declaration of Independence, you can read the Constitution, but to understand the beginnings here, why it was successful, I recommend reading Tocqueville's book. And that is, it is Democracy in America. Go pick it up at your local bookstore. I'm not saying go to Amazon these days because Amazon's into censoring. Maybe that book will be soon to be banned. Believe it or not, one of the news stories this week that I still have to figure out where I put it, which was students getting arrested on a college campus, I think it was Clarkson, for handing out constitutions. Yes, you can get arrested in the United States for handing out constitutions on a college campus. Why a police officer would arrest somebody for practicing freedom of speech is beyond my comprehension. I think that they violated their code of ethics by doing this. They violated the law. I think you could not only make a charge of false arrest, you could almost go with false imprisonment because there was nothing that these people did that was an error when they are sharing the Constitution with fellow students. The only thing I could think of is there was two people out of the three people that were there, two were not students. They were there to support the student who was passing things out, whether they were they were working together. It's just unbelievable that something like that could happen in the United States of America. This week, we lost Rush Limbaugh. It was a day of sadness. I was introduced to Rush as a young conservative in the late 80s. My mom was a Republican. My dad was a Democrat. They both loved his sense of humor and his showmanship. I remember one day they were laughing so hard as Rush played John Kerry saying, "Yes, there is WMD." And the next second he was playing Kerry saying, "No, there isn't any WMD." My parents were almost in tears from laughing so hard. Rush was vilified this week after he died by those who were jealous because they can never have such a big audience. But I'll miss the sound of his voice. I hope someday to capture that sense of humor of his and have little bits of brightness on the show like he had. I would say we should honor him with a moment of silence, but for Rush was a radio man and silence is sacrilege. So this next track is my way of, my little tribute to him. And what it is, I'm just playing a piece where Rush gets the Medal of Freedom from President Trump.
Almost every American family knows the pain when a loved one is diagnosed with a serious illness. Here tonight is a special man, beloved by millions of Americans, who just received a stage 4 advanced cancer diagnosis. This is not good news, but what is good news is that he is the greatest fighter and winner that you will ever meet. Rush Limbaugh, thank you for your decades of tireless devotion to our country. And Rush, in recognition of all that you have done for our nation, the millions of people a day that you speak to and that you inspire, and all of the incredible work that you have done for charity, I am proud to announce tonight that you will be receiving our country's highest civilian honor, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. I will now ask the First Lady of the United States to present you with the honor, please.
That was President Trump presenting Rush Limbaugh with a Medal of Freedom. He's gone, but he will not be forgotten. This week also, we had a little bit of a surprise, and you can thank Project Veritas for catching that surprise for us. Project Veritas caught Mark Zuckerberg stating he will not get a vaccination for COVID-19. Oh, he's an anti-vaxxer. And he cautions anyone against getting one. Whoa, stand against those of us who will not get a vaccination. And in fact, is silencing us. Here is what Project Veritas caught. This will blow your mind. And if I just find the tape, oh, wow. Okay, let's see here. I just had this up. And this is the joy of live radio. Sometimes you just can't get things where you want them. Project Veritas, where did you go? Oh, this might be my Z section. There, the joy of... Come on. Here we go.
But I do just want to make sure that I share some caution on this because we just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people's DNA and RNA.
DNA is inherent in your own nucleus cell.
We just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people's.
Last week, Facebook announced they are, quote, expanding their efforts to remove false claims on Facebook and Instagram about COVID-19, COVID-19 vaccines, and vaccines in general during the pandemic. Even the New York Times covered the story. Let's take a look at Facebook's most updated COVID-19 vaccine policy. It says, quote, We want to make sure that our policies help to protect people from harmful content regarding COVID-19 and vaccines. But the real kicker is right here in the policy where Facebook says it would remove any content that, quote, claims the COVID-19 vaccine changes people's DNA. Well, we just got a new leaked tape from Zuckerberg himself, the CEO of Facebook, basically violating his own code of conduct. He would be censored on the platform today for what he said. Let's take a listen.
But I do just want to make sure that I share some caution on this because we just don't know the long-term side effects of basically modifying people's DNA and RNA to directly encode in a person's DNA and RNA, basically the ability to produce those antibodies and whether that causes other mutations or other risks downstream. So there's work on both paths of vaccine development.
That was from Facebook's internal weekly Q&A meeting in July 2020. So when Zuckerberg said, quote, basically, the vaccine is modifying people's DNA, it seems pretty clear modifying is synonymous with changing. Again, Zuckerberg would be banned from Facebook for saying this. In fact, this video of me showing the CEO of Facebook talking might be banned because he is violating Facebook's policy. Seems a little bit hypocritical, don't you think? But then Zuckerberg, on November 30th, in a public live stream Q&A with White House medical advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci, appears to somewhat change his tune. He asks Fauci about the vaccines and their effect on DNA or RNA.
And just to clear up one point, I mean, my understanding is that these vaccines do not modify your DNA or RNA. So I think that's just an important point to clarify. If I'm getting anything wrong here, of course, correct me. But but just to make that clear.
No. First of all, DNA is inherent in your own nucleus cell. Sticking in anything foreign will ultimately get cleared.
Good. Well, I'm glad we can clear that up.
Yeah, I'm glad we could clear that up. It's unclear what is on Zuckerberg's mind or what's in his heart on the subject of the COVID vaccine. Isn't it interesting that Zuckerberg can vastly involve his thinking on the subject of vaccines, going as far as to caution his own staff, but as soon as he's made up his mind or appears to have made up his mind on the topic, he disallows the almost 3 billion Facebook users to do the same. Rules for thee, but not for me. The irony is, under their own community standards, they say they want people to, quote, discuss, debate, and share their personal experiences, opinions, and views as it pertains to the pandemic. But how do you, quote, discuss or debate something if you can't even share opposing views or even facts or even Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg's own statements? Now, I'm not here to tell you my opinion or give you my thoughts on the vaccine. I want to be clear about that. But it is clear that Zuck is not living up to his own book of rules. What happened to free speech? And who is on this Facebook oversight board? Who makes all of their policy decisions? You heard Nick Clegg in that leaked phone call talk about that. Talk about how they make decisions in real time.
Mark, are you very clear about that? That ideally, we wouldn't be taking these decisions on our own. We would be taking these decisions in line with and in conformity with democratically agreed rules and principles. At the moment, those democratically agreed rules don't exist. We still have to take decisions in real time.
Why do they get to determine what we can or can't say as it pertains to our health? We would know none of this, but not for the fact that we have a brave Facebook insider that continues to leak and transmit videotape of Facebook executives to Project Veritas. It's not that the insider is betraying Mark Zuckerberg. It's that Mark Zuckerberg is betraying what Facebook ought to stand for. Be brave. Do something. Send us an email or a tip at veritastips@protonmail.com.
That was a surprise. I had to play that because as I sat there and listened to it, I found something really shocking. In that little tape that was played by with Dr. Fauci answering, he said that your RNA is not affected. Well, these vaccinations for COVID-19 are entirely based on changing the RNA, modifying your RNA to combat COVID-19. That's what this is all. That's if you've done any reading of the medical journals on this particular vaccination, that's what they've been doing. That's the only reason they can vaccinate against this virus. So, I mean, it's important to understand those things. Well, here's another thing that's been going on that's kind of interesting. We now have proof that CNN, MSNBC paid for those who created acts of violence on the Capitol on January 6th. So for them, crime, are you catching this? Crime did. I don't know if you listen to or watch MRC TV. I do recommend it. One of the things you will find there is a lot of information that evaluates. This is Media Research Center, and they are an excellent organization that evaluates the news. P. Gardner Goldsmith came out with an article yesterday titled "Documents Prove CNN and NBC Paid Radical BLM Capitol Hill Rioter $35,000 apiece for footage of the January 6th break-in." The ceaseless parade of leftist pop media hypocrisy just got more obnoxious. Rumors swirled for half a day, and now the Daily Caller reveals something that almost takes a proverbial cake. CNN and NBC, two major news networks with personalities who have portrayed themselves as angry, disgusted, and horrified by what they call an insurrection by white supremacists at the Capitol on January 6th, have been caught paying $35,000 apiece to a radical leftist, pro-Antifa, Black Lives Matter agitator for his video of his own participation in the very break-in they condemn and mislabel as an insurrection. His name is John Earl Sullivan. He's 26, hails from Utah, and in July was charged with rioting and criminal mischief by local police in Provo, Utah, after he organized a June 30th protest and saw one man shot and injured. This is a guy who, as Newsweek's Ewan Palmer reports, said to others as they moved into the Capitol building, quote, "We accomplished this, bleep. We did this together, bleep. We are all part of this history, and let's burn this, bleep," person who, as Palmer notes, quote, also filmed himself assisting those who were climbing up walls to get to the plaza just outside the Capitol building entrance, telling them, "You guys are bleeping savage. Let's go." This is the guy whom CNN Anderson's Cooper in mid-January invited on his comically shallow program to chat. And now, as Chuck Ross reports for the Daily Caller, we find out that this is the guy whom CNN and NBC paid $35,000 apiece to get rights to video footage he had already turned over to the FBI. A left-wing activist, writes Ross, facing criminal charges for his involvement in Capitol riots received $35,000 from both CNN and NBC for footage he recorded of a Trump supporter being fatally shot inside the Capitol building, according to records he filed in federal court on Tuesday. Good thing they stand on the supposed principles. And of course, even though Sullivan's lawyers let the contract cat out of the bag, they claim he was documenting the event. Just documenting. Lawyers for John Sullivan, a 26-year-old Utah native, disclosed the payments as part of the activist argument that he was acting as a journalist in the Capitol rather than as a rioter. Because as we know, journalists actively help people, according to his own video footage, break into the Capitol building and verbally encourage the act that CNN and NBC hosts claim was an insurrection, equating to one of the worst moments in U.S. history. Of course, their insurrection narrative is incorrect and appears to have been concocted to frame real conservatives and Trump backers as terrifying domestic terrorists who want to tear down the good old USA and hoist the black and red swastika of the new Nazi regime. But the reality is that the pop media view of the USA is that of a ripe field for increasing socialism and control of other people's lives, not the traditional founders' view of small, decentralized, constitutionally limited government, a constitution that has fallen to the collectivist ceaseless attacks. And like everyone arrested at the Capitol break-in, even Sullivan has not been charged with insurrection. Interesting. Sullivan, who founded the social justice group Insurgents USA, was charged on January 13th with illegally entering the Capitol, civil disorder, and violent or disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. So out of all those people who entered the building, the guy whom these contemptuously pious networks paid a total of $70,000 to, the guy CNN invites to appear with Anderson Cooper, is a proven self-avowed hardcore leftist already charged in Utah, a guy who on January 6th planted himself in the midst of people with whom he did not ideologically agree and who helped agitate and conduct the very break-in these swarthy socialist media hipsters claim they abhor. You do the math right now, $70,000 tilts the equation heavily towards a judgment of towering typical media hypocrisy. Now, my question, I thought it was illegal to make money on a criminal activity. If what he did was criminal, that money should be removed from him. CNN and NBC should be charged with I don't know what the crime would be, but they should be charged with attempting to finance criminal activity. Now, this is the stuff that has to be discussed. That's what they did. They financed criminal activity. Did they pay for it afterwards? Afterwards, that means they knew about it afterwards. Oh, yes. Crazy. Qatar is, I don't know if you've heard this one. Oh, I'm sorry. Trump may be banned from life from Twitter. Have you heard that? But terrorism disseminators are not. Now, the Middle East Media Research Institute has the story on this. If you're paying attention, you've been hearing me talk about this for a few weeks now, how Twitter is sharing stuff that they shouldn't if allowed. Haters, like racist against, as long as you're against Jews, you're allowed to be on there. You're allowed to be racist against black people. You're allowed to be racist against white people. But if your name is Donald Trump, you're not allowed to be on there because you know what? You're danger. That's what they're saying. But right now, did you know, this report came out today by Alberto Fernandez on Memory, that the terrorism disseminators are still on Twitter. Again, this is a report by memory.org, and it came in its print, and it's put out by Alberto Fernandez. With the banning of a sitting U.S. president and thousands of others, supposedly for reasons having to do with the 2020 U.S. elections and outlandish conspiracy theories, the power of big tech of social media companies has never been so evident. As many have pointed out, these are private companies who have, for now, every right to decide who can participate on their own platforms based on their own subjective, opaque interpretation of their terms of service. It is a judgment call, which can be questioned by critics, but can't really be challenged, even though it sometimes seems that the ultimate gauge of what passes muster are the worldviews of the big tech clerisy inside the bubble of California's Silicon Valley. Social media companies, including Twitter, played a key role in the scope and spread of Salafi jihadi groups like the so-called Islamic State, or ISIS. When Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi declared himself caliph in June 2014, after the fall of Mosul, ISIS was able to spread the message far and wide on social media. Even though the group had been designated as a foreign terrorist organization by the State Department all the way back in 2004, it was only when the group began in August of 2014 to post videos of the beheadings of Americans and increasingly mobilize young followers worldwide, multiple languages, that Twitter and other companies took actions to take down these accounts. The accounts that Twitter removed were some semi-official accounts, but also a much larger number of informal parameters, amplifiers and enablers, ISIS trolls and fanboys. Big tech did this to protect their corporate reputation in the face of a rising anger by private citizens and well-founded fear. Big tech did this to protect their corporate reputation in the face of rising anger by private citizens and well-founded fear of government action. The purging of ISIS fanboy propagandists seemed to have been a one-off. While supporters of ISIS and Al-Qaeda continue to have difficulties on social media, propagandists for other terrorist groups have a much easier time. The media outlets Al-Ahad and Al-Echa television channels of the Iraqi terror group Kataib Hezbollah and NFTO since 2009 and Asaib al-Haq and NFTO since 2020 are on Twitter. So is Qais al-Khazali, the head of the latter organization. Beyond these official accounts, there are hundreds of ordinary Iraqi accounts connected to Iranian-controlled Shiite militias. Death squads not only amplify official propaganda, but also serve as an electronic army used to threaten civilian society members, muddy the waters after Iraqi activists and journalists are murdered, and propagate disinformation in the service of Iran and its local proxies. Twitter unconsciously played a very helpful role over the past few years in its facilitating an ongoing campaign of intimidation in Arabic waged by Iran and its henchmen against Iraqi demonstrators, civil society, and critics. The group credibly accused of assassinating Iraqi scholar Hisham al-Hashami has a media outlet and many supporters on Twitter. The same toxic media environment is replicated in Lebanon. I'm going to suggest that you continue reading this article. You go to memory.org reports and you look for terrorism disseminators are still on Twitter. This is one of these outstanding articles that I recommend. And again, if you have extra cash floating around, this is just one of those places I recommend that you share your cash. Give them a nice donation. They do a lot of good work. And I will go on to the next news piece. I don't know if you've heard this, but Qatar is now trying to play the role of mediator, believe it or not, between Iran and us. Yes, they want to play mediator between Iran and the United States. Now, will Biden's State Department be suckered into allowing the Qatar schmoozers of the Muslim Brotherhood, almost every Islamic terror group entity, the Muslim Brotherhood is the parent of almost every Islamic terror entity in the world. Yeah, think about this. They want Qatar, which basically represents the Muslim Brotherhood. They're asking to mediate between the United States and Iran. If you don't know this, the Muslim Brotherhood has been working with Iran for decades. Yes, they have. Even though the Muslim Brotherhood is a Sunni organization, they will brother up with the organization that can be the enemy of their, again, the enemy of my enemy is my friend is their mentality. Think about that. And the Iranians have been financing many Sunni organizations of terror. So this is no surprise. I wish you could say it would be, but it is not. I don't know, going back to President Trump, I don't know if you remember President Trump stopping any financing of the World Health Organization last April because of their unethical dealings with COVID-19 in the Chinese Wuhan lab. Last April, President Trump had the Washington Times wrote about President Trump, and which they said the U.S. funding wasn't put to good use, and the WHO, World Health Organization, failed to vet and share information in a timely manner. Mr. Trump said the freeze will last 60 to 90 days and should have been done by previous administrations. This is an evaluation, Mr. Trump had said. He said he will, President Trump had said, he will channel the money to the areas that most need it. The president also accused WHO, again, the World Health Organization, of failing to contain samples of the virus from China and getting a team into the source country, though WHO ultimately did get a team in with cooperation from Beijing. Mr. Trump's decision to cut off funding to the public health arm of the UN in the middle of the pandemic is sure to raise eyebrows. I know that I caught it, and I was thankful. You want to know why? Because WHO was not helping. They were helping. They were not helping us. They were helping the Chinese Communist Party cover things up. Because once you look at that timeline and you realize, now that's going to be something you're going to have to watch to see if Beijing Biden does change the timeline of things. When did China know? When did China hide things? Now, they have never admitted that this started in Wuhan in one of their level three or level four labs. They're hiding all this. Again, it's been documented even as far back as 2015. This crime against humanity was documented in 2015. But Joe Biden, I don't know if you've caught this, Joe Biden has just said he is sending the World Health Organization $200 million. Yes, he has restored their financing that President Trump ended because they were not doing anything to help America. But Joe Biden, who is a pro-communist organization, pro-Chinese communist organization, and that's Joe Biden financing his friends with your tax dollars. This week, Daniel Greenfield wrote in Jihad Watch, that the CARES Act, coronavirus relief, went to none other than, believe it or not, CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and a bail fund for criminals. The text of the CARES Act, again, this is by Daniel Greenfield, states that it was implemented to provide emergency assistance and health care responses for individuals, families, and businesses affected by the 2020 coronavirus pandemic. As Jason Rand's documents, Washington illegally imposed a racial test on the recipients. Federal aid should really be conditioned on non-discriminatory application. To qualify to the Washington Equity Relief Fund, a group of reviewers made sure that the nonprofits were led by and serving Black, Indigenous, and people of color. A group of over 100 peer reviewers discussed and scored applications before doling out funding in collaboration with the Department of Commerce. The reviewers were, quote, prioritized on the basis of their race. I thought that was a violation of federal law, to prioritize on basis of race. Isn't that against our Constitution? Absolutely. About 95% identified as a racial minority and 77% experienced poverty. Ironically, the Department of Commerce had the reviewers who were excluding nonprofits run by white people due to perceived privilege go through compulsory anti-bias training. Consider all of this to essentially be funding for Democrat organizers and campaign operations at taxpayer expenses. That's the case with much of the community nonprofit sector that's funded by city, state, and federal funds. But it gets worse. Collective Justice, part of the Public Defenders Association, is a partisan social justice group. It actively lobbies light on crime policies and is now being propped up by federal tax dollars. The nonprofit is currently asking supporters to back a Democrat-sponsored bill forcing courts to ignore the juvenile crimes of adult defendants in sentencing. It received $25,000 in federal tax dollars through the state. Also receiving the funds, the Council on Islamic-American Relations of Washington. That's the state of Washington. It frequently engages in partisan political activism and has fundraised locally for the anti-Semitic Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, a Democrat of Minnesota. The Bail Project Spokane received $50,000 from the fund. The nonprofit is part of the national group which opposes cash bail. It has been responsible for paying the bail for criminals who commit high-profile crimes after release. The more money the government spends, that's a solid rule. And the coronavirus turned into a pretext for funding some of the worst. This is not how politicians sold the CARES Act, but it's how Democrats implemented it. Think about that. Now, Dr. Stephen Kirby this week caught the Iowa State Senate praying to Allah, not once, but twice. And he wrote about it on Jihad Watch this past Saturday. I was surprised when I saw this article. I know Dr. Stephen Kirby, and I have to say that was a shocker for me. I wish I could say it wasn't. Maybe that would be worse. But here's what Dr. Stephen Kirby wrote. He said, the Iowa State Senate opens each daily session with a prayer. On February 8th, State Senator Sarah Tone Garriott of Democrat shared a prayer written by one of her constituents who was a Muslim. The prayer was to Allah and included references to a number of Allah's 99 names. It is interesting that the Iowa State Senate prayed to the Muslim God Allah, even though there are no Muslim members of the Senate. It is even more interesting that these state senators bowed their heads in prayer to a God who curses Christians and Jews and condemns them to hell. Here's what Allah has to say in the Quran about Christians and Jews. Allah states that the only religion acceptable to him is Islam. That's from Quran 3:19 and 3:85. Christians and Jews are disbelievers. That's from Quran 2:120, 3:99, 3:110, and 5:65. Jews are among the worst enemies of Muslims. That's from the Quran chapter 5, verse 82. Allah curses Christians and Jews. That's chapter 9, verse 30, and states that those who believe that Allah has a son commits the unforgivable sin in Islam called shirk. That's from chapter 4, verse 48, and chapter 4, 1:16. Allah states those who commit shirk will go to hell. Chapter 3, 151, chapter 5, 72 to 73. This goes on. And this is the person that they prayed to. It's okay to pray to somebody who hates Christians and Jews in a public government place as part of being an act of government? Dr. Kirby says a lot about this. It is something to think about. I think his work is extensive, and it should be listened to. One of the things he put in here is he wrote, here is what Allah's prophet Muhammad specifically said about Jews. One, he's got three things. One, kill the Jews, narrated Abu Huraira. Allah's messenger said, the hour will not be established until you fight against the Jews, and the stone behind which a Jew will be hiding will say, oh, Muslim, there's a Jew hiding behind me, so kill him. Second thing he puts up, Muhammad said the Jews were grave robbers. Al-Bukhari reported this hadith under the heading of what has been said about Bani Israel. Uqba bin Amir said, I heard him, Muhammad, saying that the Israeli used to dig the grave of the dead to steal their shrouds. His third point, Muhammad even said that Jews would be accompanying the Antichrist. Anas B. Malik reported that Allah's messenger said that Antichrist would be followed by 70,000 Jews of Isbahan wearing Persian shawls. Again, his work, Dr. Kirby's work, is extensive. When you read something like this, you sit there and you wonder, how is it possible, in this day and age where information is readily available, that someone could be so ignorant in a position of government? Well, that's part of what the Muslims are counting on. They're counting on you not knowing this information. And that, unfortunately, is a sad, sorry fact. Okay. Next thing I want to talk about is King Andy. I live in New York State, and we have a guy named Andrew Cuomo who considers himself the king. Now, he may not use that term, King, but he is judge, jury, executioner, and everything these days. The Justice Department is separate, but he is the he basically considers himself the legislative and the executive branches. Now, that's something to think about. We have a wussy legislature, totally led by Democrats. So the only one you can blame here is the Democrats, because they aren't letting the Republicans who would like to have a voice have a voice. How do I know that? Believe me, I've been talking to them. Why am I talking about King Andy? Well, King Andy has written regulations early on in the quote pandemic, where he required nursing homes to take in people who were diagnosed with COVID-19 without anything to protect those around the patient from getting COVID-19. This was a known killer at this point. So my understanding is that these people were received with 15 body bags. Now, I've read that in many news sources, and I will share them at a later point, but I'm just kind of shocked when I think about this. So here's what I've got to share, and I just got to get to the part. I have a piece on King Andy being investigated. Now, again, we have to pay attention to what's going on. This is the truthful thing that we have to do. Some of these things will sit, you know, they just shock you. At least I know they do to me. And just trying to get to this video, I mean, this audio. Here we go. This is Fox News on King Andy.
He is paid to care, and he hasn't realized that yet. And he needs to care. He needs to show empathy. And the COVID knows no political party. We are COVID orphans. And we're going to tell you, COVID knows no political party. He's the only one that has made this a political issue. And he needs to stop, because it's insulting me as a Democrat. It's insulting the Democratic Party, the Republican Party, any party you're with. COVID does discriminate.
That was Daniel and Peter Orbini. They lost their father to COVID-19 in a New York State nursing home. Joining me now is former House Oversight Chair Jason Chaffetz. Jason, first your reaction to what the Orbini brothers were saying.
Well, you know, it's sad. There are thousands and thousands of stories just like theirs, and it is sad. But they are correct about Governor Cuomo. I mean, you know, when he says, you know, they died, who cares, or some quote like that. You know, he's out there winning awards and accepting the pats on the back from Hollywood. He's, you know, he's writing a book in the middle of the pandemic. I don't know how he does that. But these are real families and real people.
Yeah, and when he said, who cares, people died, that sounded pretty self-incriminating. Yeah. When he said, you know, who cares. Okay, if he's so copacetic, who cares who died, then he shouldn't care about releasing all the documents and transcripts about what exactly happened behind the scenes in his administration for covering up the true number of nursing home deaths related to his executive order that created a super spreader disaster in nursing homes. By the way, nursing homes were blocked from testing for COVID due to his executive order. I'd like your reaction to Democrat lawmaker Ronald Kim. He lost his uncle to COVID-19 in a nursing home. Jason, he now says Governor Cuomo threatened to, quote, destroy him if Kim did not, quote, help cover and provide political protection for Cuomo's top aide, Melissa DeRosa, who admitted, yeah, we covered up the true nursing home death toll. We froze because of President Trump's DOJ probe. What do you say to that?
Well, it really does demand a significant probe by federal investigators. Unfortunately, my understanding is Melissa DeRosa's mother-in-law is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York. So they're going to have to bring in somebody else from the Department of Justice to properly do an investigation without a conflict of interest. You have nine, I think it's the Democratic lawmakers that are calling on the governor to take some dramatic action and step step away from this issue. You have the one specific Democrat who's saying that he was threatened. I think anybody in law enforcement would like to know specifically, because remember, this is allegedly a cover-up of the numbers. Now, it's not just about New York. The Centers for Disease Control is trying to figure out how the disease is spread, who it's affecting, how it's being affected. And so when you cover up and don't provide that data to the Centers of Disease Control, it affects all of us across the country, because the scientists then can't do their job.
That's an important point that you just made. You know, and you wonder if the Biden administration, if the DOJ there would do a probe, because of what you pointed out, Melissa DeRosa's mother-in-law is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. That's Audrey Strauss. We also have this Democrat lawmaker, Gustavo Rivera. He's saying, you know, Cuomo, you stonewalled us for 7 months, and it only took your Democrat state attorney general to pry the information out of you. You weren't including hospital deaths, nursing home patients put in hospitals and dying in hospitals in your numbers because you wanted to make yourself look better. You know, and now we have an impeachment push, a petition to impeach him by New York lawmakers. It's got 16,000, 18,000 signatures. What do you say to that?
Well, I think it's warranted. I mean, he's earned this. He was out there every day trying to put this calm blanket on it. Ends up that he was absolutely covering this up. And that doesn't come from some Republican lawmaker not in his state. That comes from a Democrat within his own administration who was one of his aides. And so not only was he not giving the feds this information, that's the allegation, but he wasn't also giving that information to the state of New York, to the Democrats who were asking for this information. And here you have his top aide, the person who is literally at his right hand to help him to execute this, trying to explain this on tape and telling people that that's exactly what they did.
Yeah.
I mean, what else do they need to have? And why isn't the Biden-Harris administration moving on this immediately to appoint the proper prosecutor who doesn't have a conflict of interest to get to the bottom of it and get to the bottom of it now?
So everybody's, New Yorkers, everybody's just supposed to be okay, right? We're all supposed to be just okay and, you know, just go by the rules, go by what, you know, elected officials working on now or nickel decide and do. We're supposed just to be okay. We're all supposed to be just okay with Governor Cuomo threatening a fellow Democrat, saying, you're going to feel my wrath. I'm going to destroy your career. You know, his uncle died of COVID-19 in a nursing home. You know, calling, you know, mocking Janice Dean with sexist remarks that she should stick to the weather. This is what taxpayers are paying for? This is what we get for our money? Really? We have 15,000 people dead. He put 9,000 patients back in. Why doesn't he just step up and apologize? Just be, you know, put on your big boy pants and say, I'm sorry, and take accountability and take responsibility. Your final word.
Yeah, I think not only should he apologize, but he should step aside. He's not up to the job. He's showing a willingness to just be disrespectful to people who have lost their lives, says he doesn't care, you know, about how they died. And he's got a huge conflict of interest now because they were allegedly covering up. That comes from his own aide. Step aside, Governor. That's what needs to happen.
I, for one, would like to see him jailed. I have not been allowed to hold my father in my arms. He's not been allowed to, we've not been allowed to touch each other since this insanity began in March. My father's had two injections of this vaccination. And again, it's over 7 days and I still am not allowed to be in his presence without a glass wall between us. This is insane. What are they trying to do? Push older people into the grave. And this is just King Andy's policies. And it's okay. But the FBI is now officially investigating King Andy. And the U.S. attorney in Brooklyn is now probing into the nursing home deaths to see if criminal charges can be placed. Will it happen? Or are Democrats above the law? We will find out. I'm not sure what to think will happen. And, you know, going back to King Andy saying, what does it matter? Who cares? Doesn't that sound like somebody else we know. Hillary, wasn't that her response to the people who died in Benghazi? I think he's trying to quote her. Let's go across the pond to the UK. Muslim migrants living in a free hotel paid for by taxpayers. These people came without, you know, they came on their own, basically illegals. And they came and they're now living in a hotel paid for by taxpayers. And they're complaining about the food being so bad that they've decided to do a hunger strike. This article is in Sky News. It's by Adele Robinson. It's titled, Asylum Seekers Go on Hunger Strike Over Poor Food That Caused Some to End Up in the Hospital. It's believed that the Home Office gave £6 a day per person to some companies providing food, but this is often subcontracted. A group of asylum seekers staying in a hotel and Reading has gone on hunger strike in a protest at a poor food and lengthy asylum claim. Some of the men and women have said they have been in their rooms for over 8 months. So it's a free place. They claim the food provided is unhealthy and it's given to them in too small quantities. So there are among a growing number of asylum seekers. Again, they're illegally getting free ride, who have complained about the conditions they are living in, again, provided for free in some parts of England. So Ahahi Lakhtar has been at the hotel for over 3 months, and he claimed, and others, have lost weight as a result of poor food. Well, did you bring any money to pay for your food? So you're not planning on working? Yeah, they expect everybody to provide for them. That is the jizya belief. Yes, they believe the non-Muslims must provide for them. The 24-year-old said some people are having kidney problems and many people have ended up in the hospital with bad conditions and medical problems because of the food. Again, if you didn't bring money to pay for the food, why do you expect to be given something for free? I'm just kind of amazed that this article even made it any place, that somebody considered this news instead of calling them out and saying, hey, if you don't like what's being given to you for free, leave. I get kind of surprised when I hear these things, you know, but I don't think the mentality of the UK is strong enough that they would tell people who want to insult them, you want something better, go home. Maybe it's better there. If you think the food is better, go back. You can probably get a job there. Okay. Next article. I sit here and I hear some of these things. I just can't go, why? The next article comes from a Sweden. A Swedish preschool was ordered to purge suspected Islamic extremists from its board or face closure. This article was in Russia Today, and I don't know where it went. I thought I had it up. Oh, here we go. Okay. A preschool in Swedish city of Gothenburg has been ordered to replace its entire board or face closure after security police found ties between its founding chairman and violent Islamic extremists operating the country. The school, called Snadgruppen, which means snowflake, reportedly has links to the controversial secretive group, the School of Science, according to the media reports. If they, in principle, don't replace the entire board, in the principle, they cannot continue to run the business, Amanda Larsson of the Gothenburg Preschool Board said, as cited by the Swedish media. Local authorities demanding the school replace its entire board or face being shut down amid fears it has been infiltrated by violent extremists who may pose a national security threat to Sweden or who may attempt to isolate children from the secular state and radicalize them. The Snowflake School has been run by a husband and wife since it opened in 2011, and authorities fear that despite stepping down, Officially, the man continues to pull strings at the preschool, making use of its resources, possibly for nefarious purposes. We assess the man hasn't left the business and thus continues to have an impact. For example, he can still use the company's car, which shows a close relationship with the current principal. Larson added, following discussions with the Swedish security police, the school authorities have been issued an ultimatum to find a new principal by April or close, which would affect some 30 local kids. Children. The Swedish school system has been plagued by issues with suspected extremist infiltration into its ranks in recent years. This is something to think about. Wow. Can you imagine a local school being closed because someone who is on the is possible terrorist is working there? You know, the closest we come are there are schools in the area that yeah, we'll get into that another day. Okay. Next story comes from Malta. A man who converted to Christianity from Islam is living in terror after being stabbed for apostasy. The man's conversion to Christianity is suspected to be the motive behind his stabbing. This article comes from Malta Today by Matthew Agius. We suspect that Muslim man's conversion to Christianity was the motive behind a stabbing in a Mazda garage on 26th of January, with his lawyer arguing that he was living in fear of his assailants were on bail. Samar Halil Hanan, the 26-year-old Syrian man charged with grievously injuring 29-year-old Lamir Muhammad, also Syrian, whom he stabbed in the neck, claims he hit the man by mistake with a knife during a fight, again, that erupted at a garage. In a sitting in sitting before the magistrate, Joe Misfit, this morning, a police sergeant testified that Lemire had told police that he meant to meet another man, a certain Jama, to receive some money owed to him. But when he went to the man's garage, he found Simar waiting for him. The sergeant said Lemire had explained that he had been a Muslim and had converted to Christianity to marry a Maltese woman. In Syria, there was a practice whereby if they kill an apostate, they are assured passage into an afterlife, the sergeant went on. On his part, Jomo has told police that he had owed money to the victim over some aluminum works and had hit him by mistake. Yeah, if you believe that when I got pieces of the Brooklyn Bridge to sell you. Yeah, it was a mistake. That knife just flew through his, you know, landed in that guy's neck by mistake. Yeah, that's you have to be pretty stupid to believe that one. And the lawyer arguing has to be really incompetent to even suggest it is one of the things I would say. Anybody shocked? I mean, this is one of the things that I've been saying. Hatred is one of the things taught in Islam, and the persons who suffer the most basically are Muslims. And that is the sad, sorry truth of it. If you're taught to hate all that is not Islamic, you are the ones that suffer. It's crazy. You're the one who suffers the most. Not learning to love those in your family, that's the sadness. This next article is about Iran. This will make you laugh. This is probably the funniest piece of the day. An Iranian cleric, this is in the Jerusalem Post by Benjamin Weinthal. Iranian cleric, people who are vaccinated for COVID have become homosexuals. When I saw this, I just had to laugh, but I thought it was something worth sharing. So we'll just get into that. And if I can just get this piece to move, here we go. And here we go. The joy of some things getting in the way. Pop-ups are a bummer. Okay. An Iranian regime cleric in the holy city of Qom on Tuesday issued a homophobic rant against people vaccinated for COVID-19, claiming they become gay after receiving the vaccine. Ayatollah Abbas Tabrizian wrote on the Telegram social media platform, "Don't go near those who have had the COVID vaccine. They'll become homosexuals." The radical Muslim has nearly 210. I don't consider them radical. I consider this is what the article says. The radical Islamist has nearly 210,000 followers on his Telegram account. Tabrizian has a history of derogatory opinions about Western medicine. Last year, a video showed him burning Harrison's Manual of Medicine and saying that Islamic medicine has made such books irrelevant, according to an article on the website of Radio Farda, Iranian branch of the U.S.-funded Radio Free European Radio Liberty Broadcast Service. Like other clerics in the regime, also Tabrizian relates all the shortcomings to sexuality. Shana Vojvodi, an Iranian dissident who fled the Islamic Republic of Iran due to repression, told the Jerusalem Post on Sunday that clerics in Iran are suffering from lack of knowledge and humanity. Actually, his goal of spreading nonsense is to try to scare people out of getting vaccinated while the leader of the regime and other officials got Pfizer, and they don't provide it for the people with the excuse that they don't trust the West. According to Peter Tatchell, a LGBTQ person and human rights campaigner, Ayatollah Tabrizian combines scientific ignorance with a crude appeal to homophobia. Yeah, that's got to be one of the funniest claims I've seen so far. But unfortunately, I wish you could say I wouldn't expect it, but that one kind of put me in stitches. Next up, we have an article from Iran. Hatred of Islam against Muslims who are not Muslim enough. Now, again, I keep saying that Muslims are the ones who lose out the most because of hatred. And this next article really shows it. The SDF has captured ISIS militants who are accused of killing two women. Let me just read this. The Syrian Democratic Forces announced on this past Saturday that they have captured Islamic State members believed to be responsible for the killing of two northeast Syrian Rojava municipal employees in January. The two suspects were captured in an operation carried out in rural Deir ez-Zor province by SDF's anti-terror units. They are accused of kidnapping. These people are accused of kidnapping and shooting dead two Rojava municipal employees, Hind Latif Al-Qaeda and Saada Faisal Al-Haman, on January 22nd. ISIS claimed responsibility for their assassinations, saying that they raided the women's homes and shot them with machine guns, accusing the women of affiliation with the Kurdistan Workers' Party, which ISIS describes as an apostate group. Both women had received death threats from ISIS, according to the UK-based conflict monitor, Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Their bodies were found in the town of Al-Dashia in southern Hasaka province. ISIS was declared territorially defeated in Iraq in December of 2017 and in Syria in March 2019, but remains active in areas across Iraq and Syria. In the last 3 months of 2020, ISIS claimed 101 attacks across Syria, mainly in areas controlled by the regime and the SDF, according to the U.S.-led coalition against ISIS. While the number of attacks was down from the same period the year before, the Pentagon said that ISIS is trying to stir up trouble between Kurds and Arabs. Again, they're trying to kill themselves off the hatred. One of the practices, I said it earlier in the show, one of the practices in Islam is when you want to have a fight with a guy across the street who's also Muslim, you declare him not Muslim, and then a hijra happens where the guy, you know, the people who are with this guy now have to come and be with you. And then you have the jihad. This has been going on for hundreds of years, people. It's not something new. And what's new is our ignorance of it. That is a very scary factual thing there. The fact that we are now ignorant of these things, it's upsetting that we would be. Next up, I have an Islamic gender apartheid moment. Gambia banned female genitalia mutilation. As a result, one of the country's top imams has condemned the ban on FGM. Sidi Darbo, the voice of Gambia, has a story. One of the Gambian top imams has condemned a ban on female genitalia mutilation in the country and talked hard on campaign groups, which he said are spreading falsehood about FGM everywhere. Imam Abdulie Fati. Yes, that is correct. I said Fati. His last name is spelled F-A-T-T-Y. Made the condemnation as he descended on campaigners against FGM in his last Friday's sermon at mosque in around Bartax prior to the congregational Jumat prayer. Imam Fati in his sermon emphasized that FGM has been a practice since the time of the Prophet Ibrahim, and it was witnessed by Prophet Muhammad during his time too. Quote, my dear Muslim people, I'm advising us on the fear of God, all of us. Let's follow the teachings of Islam. My dear Muslim people, we used to hear it in hearsay, and they have a wake campaign, and that is the reason why we do this type of sermon anytime they came back, but they will meet us like the sun in the sky, he said. He went on, do small human beings can look down upon. If there is a thing in Islam, like don't remove your nail, it is haram forbidden if you do it. Don't look down on it. Quote, we don't give it to anybody to come and teach us about our deen. We don't give chance to anybody to come and teach us about our culture. White is with their dirty, what is with their dirty culture? And men are marrying to each other and they legalize it. Women and women are marrying each other and they legalize it. Some have even pinned their private parts. There goes on and on. A lot more yeah. He is really condemning. I think the holy sad thing here is this guy could get a lot of publicity just based on his name, Imam Fati. And he is, yeah, sad. And he's the head imam for the country. I'm happy that the country has done the right thing. And that's Gambia we're talking about. Gambia has outlawed FGM. Believe it or not, this country, the United States, a country that's supposed to stand up for freedom, has not outlawed it. You would think that it would be illegal, but it is not. It was at one point, but we had liberals who decided to make it legal. There is no medical benefit for FGM. That makes this mutilation. Pakistan. Robert Spencer caught Pakistan's president this week complaining that the West has associated Islam with terrorism. He had this to say. Then Prime Minister Imran Khan said Monday, the West conveniently associated with Islam with terrorism. But in the last 20 years, Muslim countries unfortunately did not respond to this narrative. Muslim leaders should have stood up to the West and made it clear that there is no link between Islam or any other religion with terrorism. See, the reason why anyone thinks Islamic terrorism is a reality as opposed to the genuine threat of right-wing extremism is because of the ever dastardly non-Muslim West and reality. And really, who else's fault could it be? Well, back in the real world, I like Robert Spencer's writing. However, it is false to claim that the West associated Islam with terrorism. The terrorists themselves did that. Take 9/11, which is just one of innumerable possible examples. In March of 2009, the masterminds of the 9/11 plot, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, Ramzi bin al-Shibi, Walid bin Attash, Mustafa Ahmed al-Hawsawi, and Ali Abd al-Aziz, Ali, styling themselves as the 9/11 Shura Council, wrote a lengthy communique titled The Islamic Response to the Government's 9 Accusations. In it, they wrote, quote, "Many thanks to God for his kind gesture in choosing to perform the act of jihad for this cause and to defend Islam and Muslims. Therefore, killing you and fighting you, destroying you and terrorizing you, responding back to your attacks are all considered to be great, legitimate duties in our religion. We ask to be near to God. We fight you and destroy you and terrorize you. The jihad in God's cause is a great duty in our religion." They quoted numerous Quran verses, including one stating that to those against whom war is waged, permission is given to fight because they are wronged, and verily Allah is most powerful to their, for their aid. That's from chapter 22:39. And another commanding Muslim to fight in the way of Allah, those who fight you, be not the transgressor. Allah likes not the transgressor. That's chapter 2, verse 190. They even quoted the notorious verse of the sword, that's Surah 9:5. Then fight and slay the pagans wherever you find them, and seize them and besiege them and lie in wait for them in each and every ambush. To cinch their case, they used two verses, enjoining Muslims to strike terror into the hearts of their foes. Soon we will shall cast terror into the hearts of the unbelievers, for they join companies with Allah, for which he sent no authority. And if you read, this is one of the things that gets me. When you read this, I mean, it's very detailed. But on top of that, he's having a problem with equating Islam with terrorism. Let's read Surah 8, 12 to 13. It says this: "Recall that your Lord inspired the angels. Quote, I am with you, so support those who believed. I will throw terror." This is Allah speaking. He says, "I am with you, so support those who believed. I will throw terror into their hearts of those who disbelieved." Wait a minute. Terrorism. The person throwing terror into hearts is Allah. So if Allah is the creator of terror, how do you claim that, how do you make a claim that it's not Islamic? That should make you think. I am down to the wire. I'm run out of my news stories tonight, and I'm going to call it a night. It's been a busy week. I'm concerned that we are not doing what we should. What do I mean by that? We're not out there sharing the stories. We're not out there sharing the truth. We're sharing it with just each other. How do we get these truths out to those who are ignorant? That's a challenge for each of us now. How do we introduce the truth to those who don't know? Christians do this on a regular basis, and they do this by living their example of Christ. How do we get facts like this stuff out? How do we wake up school districts that have their textbooks perverted? It's time we start thinking of ways to change things. And stop them from being so perverse. We have a problem with today's society with communists being in charge and jihadis being in charge. And we are doing nothing. Crazy. I'm just mind blown with all that's going on. And we are doing nothing but standing and sharing. And we've got to get this information out to those who are out there, and they're not listening. They need to be told the truth. How do we get the truth to them? That's something I'm working on. I'm working on broadening my platform. I want this truth out. I want the facts out. We have to start thinking about how do we do that. If you want to follow me on Facebook, look for Civilization Jihad Awareness. You will find that group. I run that group, and I try to keep it informed. You can find me on LinkedIn. I've got over 18,000 followers there. You can come join in. Get your pastors to invite people like me to your churches to explain, how the evils of Islam are there and what they're doing to your local school districts to change the textbooks. Now, it's not just Islam that's doing this, believe it or not. It is the commies also. They are changing the requirements to be president in your textbooks. That's been going on since the 90s. Ah, yes. It used to say, when I grew up, that you had to be born in the United States of America to be president of the, to be a president, to even run for president. But they no longer teach that in public schools. Yes, that part has been removed from your textbooks. Is it still in the Constitution? Absolutely. But we stopped teaching that to our children. What can we do today to get these truths out? What can we do to stop the lies being taught to our children? Be informed and do what you can to get the truth out. Share this show, and I am going to end early for a change. I want to say thank you for listening. God bless you all. And here we go with Toby Keith.
American girls and American guys, we'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down. Brought to you courtesy of the red, white, and blue. Sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass. It's the American way. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining.